This is the Press Box on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 92.5.
Powered by Infuse Energy, affordable, hassle-free energy from a company that has your back. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Patrick Creighton.
Hey, don't forget my man Aaron Raybould as well, as we're going to take you for the next 3 hours on the Press Box. So what up, H-Town? And how we doing? I got to get that in before I don't have a chance to ever say it again. Damn well better believe I'm going to say it whenever I feel like it. We are here on a Thursday. Always good to have my man Pat Creighton next to me, as we're going to be talking sports and other things. Aaron behind the glass, and you guys, wherever you may be in the big city, getting ready to carry on some conversation with us, get some discussions going, and chat about all the different worldly affairs as they relate to Houston sports and other things. How's everybody's day going today?
Well, I didn't break my phone screen today.
That would be me.
I did not yell at anyone for texting or calling me too much today, although I was on the phone pretty much for 3.5 hours straight this morning.
Straight.
Not a fan of all that.
I don't know how that happens, but okay.
It happens with getting calls on top of each other all frickin' morning. I felt like I was back in the mortgage industry. His phone just didn't stop ringing. But other than that, my son got his Letterman jacket today. He's very excited.
Congratulations.
About that.
In?
He got it for band.
So this one time at band camp experience has turned into a letter.
He letters in band because now understand, I didn't go through any of this because in New York, band is different than it is here in Texas.
Evidently in Wisconsin, it is too.
And like with their marching band, there's like tiers. And you have to be the top tier to be able to get a letter. So you have to be the best at like whatever you play in your school and able to letter. So he got his letter this year. He's very happy. And I'm very happy for him.
I'm sorry, what position? What instrument does he play?
He plays baritone.
Baritone.
It's a large horn. Okay. Not as big as a tuba, but bigger than a bigger than a trumpet.
So he plays with big instruments and he can blow. You also can bring the heat. So he just translated it from generation to generation, but turned it into a more productive way of doing things by making sweet music with it.
He's really good too.
Okay.
So he got his Letterman jacket. He's very excited.
In New York, did you letter for band or cheerleading?
Neither.
Correct. Me either. Aaron, when you went to high school.
Actually, dual for band and choir.
You could letter.
Yeah.
Really?
Yep.
Okay. Things are changing. I did not know that.
I mean, you can do it for anything now, as long as you have, basically, as long as you have somebody who is part of the staff that can write a, not an excuse, but as long as they sign a piece of paper saying you've done enough and done enough credits or done whatever the qualifications are to get a letter jacket. If you have a teacher that likes you, that runs like the Spanish club, I mean, there's teachers who probably say they were not going to do it because they don't want to be they don't want to set a bad example for a child or a 16-year-old. But there are teachers, like a friend of mine in high school, I just remember the story. I don't even remember the freaking name. She was in quote unquote Latin club. It was her and like three other people, and all they did was watch Gladiator like 3 times a year. For some stupid reason.
And lettered?
And yeah, the teacher didn't care. I mean, the teacher was doing it as a whatever. And so they were like, hey, can we get our letter jackets to like sophomore year, junior year? And she was like, yeah, sure. And so she wrote a note and they went down to Balfour.
Oh,
and they
I'm
paid
disgusted.
The $800 or whatever it was.
I'm disgusted by this. Because when I played sports, there were minimums. There were like, I lettered in 4 different sports. Like for golf, you had to play in a certain amount of tournaments by the end of the season to qualify for your letter. Same thing with whether it be games or minutes played.
Now, sports had that.
Yeah.
I had
a friend who got
hers in golf.
Okay.
And she had to play so many tournaments every month to get there. And again, it depends. Like, band is very different. Band has you have to do this many, you know, you have to be in this many performances, you have to show up to this many events, all that other fun stuff. But there are teachers, certainly, that'll skirt the rules and go, hey, do you want your letter jacket for art club? Sure,
that was a barometer for us. Like as freshmen, you were like, okay, I'm like one tournament away from getting my letter. I'm this many minutes or this many games or quarters or whatever from getting my letter. And it was something that motivated you even more. So that's what kind of bothers me. If a teacher can like fudge a letter or two and the next thing you know, you got a letter on your jacket, I think that's blasphemy.
Where were these teachers? But like for me in New York, it was if you were on varsity and you played the year, even if you sat on the bench the whole time, if you played the year, you lettered.
So you didn't have to get any games or anything.
If you were on the team
yeah.
and the coach played you 2 minutes a game, if you got three at-bats, if you stayed on varsity the whole year, you lettered.
Okay.
You know, I don't know how it is down here. My son is into archery and rock climbing and kayaking, not team sports. But for band, you had to be this top-tier band. You have to score X number of, like, perfect scores at UIL X number of times in order to get into this band. And so it's he had to go through a lot of different progressions to get there. And not everybody gets it. You have to be the top band. You got to earn it.
So is this not – is this the band that performs at the games at halftime, or is this like a more jazz band class? Because we had – in high school, there was regular band. There was jazz band. There were concertos and
all that. I'm going to try to explain this as best I can because the answer is I don't fully understand it. Marching band and band are like symbiotic but not one and the same.
Okay.
So you can be in the band and not be in the marching band. There's five different
Does
levels.
Does the band that sits at the bleachers and plays during basketball games, is that different than the marching band that does the half times at the football games?
Yes.
Ah.
Because if the football, the marching is one of its own separate entities. So it's like you've got all these levels of band, but then there's a spinoff of just the marching band. And you can be in any level of the five levels of band and still participate in marching band. Okay. But in order if you're going to be in the show, because they go to state competitions and stuff with UIL, there's, like I said, they're in practice from 8 in the morning till 5 at night, practicing their steps and their moves and their progressions and then knowing the music and all that. So they work at it. It's a lot more work than I ever would have thought. Like, I never would have thought, all right, marching band, how hard can it be? It's they put in a lot of freaking work.
Okay.
So
these are things I did not know. I did not know Jack Easterby was on the field on a daily basis and Pat was witnessing this, and so was the other media members. And now I find out that you can letter in band.
You can.
And that there's a difference between the band and marching band.
Yes, there is. Yep.
Because the thing that would also drive me a little bit nuts is, if you have the rhythm to play an instrument, and you can read music, and you can execute it, you should also have enough rhythm to be able to figure out the marching part of a marching band. Although it gets tricky, I understand.
I don't know because I've never done it. But my son has said to me, the way that they do the steps and marching, it's not regular, like it's not like you're walking and doing steps. There's a specific way they have to do it. And his shoes are always worn out to specific spots. So I don't know what it is because I never did it. And when they're practicing, I'm at work.
He needs a shoe contract then.
He definitely needs a shoe contract because shoes are freaking expensive.
NIL. Get this man a shoe contract.
But he got his jacket today and he's really excited. And my daughter, who is a freshman, my son's a senior, my daughter's a freshman, she saw the jacket and she loves it. So now she really wants to be able to, you know, get to her jacket one day. And
now, what will she pursue her jacket in?
Well, she's in the band. She plays the same instrument.
Oh, she's
my
also
son
in band.
So she plays the same instrument.
They both are experienced with blowing big horns.
And my daughter's also in karate. She just earned a brown belt.
But that's not a high school sport.
It's not a high school sport.
Okay.
But kayaking is not a high school sport, and neither is archery, at least not in our high school.
I would think in Colorado it might be.
But this is what they're into. So as long as they have something that is active, that they're into, I'm happy. It doesn't happen. I played hockey. They don't have to play hockey. I play baseball. They don't have to play baseball. I played football to an extent, and my body broke a few times. My wife was never letting them play football. That was just not going to happen. But hockey, baseball, my son's not really into hockey and baseball, but he's into other things. And like I said, I picked up archery because of him.
Mm-hmm.
So, by the way, I went to that Hunter's Exposition.
Yeah, I saw the picture.
Dude, they had some cool ass bows. I got to try some out and target shoot some stuff. It was fun.
Did you draw any target? Did you do well with them?
I hit a couple. I'm not as good as my
son. It's an Olympic sport, you know. It might not be a varsity letter sport, but you know, if you keep shooting the bow well, you could go to the Olympics.
I'm not as good as my son is, but they stagger. They had like a little shooting area there, and they staggered all different little small animals, and I hit a few. I was pretty happy with it. It was fun.
Bo Jackson, big into bow hunting and archery, and Brett Favre. Little known fact that when they had the OTAs, which was when Favre was really when they had to move him out of Green Bay because he was bigger than the organization and he was acting like he didn't listen to anybody, they'd go to OTAs and the rest of the team would be practicing on the field, and he had the training staff set up archery targets behind the netting in the indoor practice facility, and he'd shoot bow for an hour or two.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, but that was just the beginning of the end because they were like, he's not listening to us. He's not going to do what we say. And so if we're going to have any kind of tenure here, we're going to have to probably move him along. So that was that. Yeah, I broke my phone this morning. That was exciting. I guess regardless of how everybody's handling the pandemic, the parental drop-off line is exponentially worse than it was a year ago by like 90 cars. So what used to be me zipping in the parking lot, waiting in about a 10-15 car line, getting the kid out on her way to school, being good, dropping the other one at the other school and being on my way, now is turning into a 45-minute adventure, and I'm not too pleased. Lisa says it may last 2 weeks. If it lasts more than that, we're going to have a problem. Just going to voice my opinion.
So what's the deal with your school district? Are they opening up a virtual academy for elementary school kids?
There is a limited number of virtual spots available in Fort Bend County, Fort Bend ISD, for those that would like. And my next-door neighbor, we saw them last night. Lisa and I took the girls to the park, and they were getting out of the car, and they were asking how the first day of school was, and we were like, you know, Taylor was great. Did she wear a mask? Yes, she did. They're asking all these questions. We're like, well, how was the girls' first day of school? They have two girls. And they said, oh, we did not send them. We're not sending them. I was like, oh. And they were waiting to see if Fort Bend was going to be one of the school districts that would actually file suit against the governor and push back, and they wanted virtual. And we're just, you know, we feel like she's good to go. And, you know, if they say wear a mask, she'll wear a mask, but she's there.
Yeah, so that in Katy, they just, like this week, decided they're going to open up the virtual stuff for elementary grade up to sixth grade because those kids, they don't have the option of getting vaccinated. So we're waiting to see. You have until September 17th, I believe it is, to enroll in the virtual academy.
And are you going to keep them in person?
Or no, my kids are going to go in person.
Yeah,
they're in high school, so they don't have the same option. But if you go virtual in high school, you're out of all extracurriculars.
So if you don't go in person, you can't participate
this year. You don't go in person, you couldn't be in the band or on the football team or on the soccer team or on anything. You're out. It's all home. That's it. It's almost like just being homeschooled.
Really? Because I know people in the past.
Because there's no funding this year.
I dated a girl in Portland who had two brothers that were 6'9 and 6'10, and they were homeschooled.
But they could play on a basketball.
But they could play on a basketball.
Last year, if you were in the virtual academy, you could still be on everything. This year, you couldn't. And I don't know if it's because of funding, because, you know, the state said we're not giving you funding for any virtual stuff this year. But that's the change in the rule from last year to this year.
Wow. Okay. Good little bits of information there. We're just getting started. We got plenty more opportunities for you guys to be a part of the program. We got Astros, Texans, Rockets. Deshaun spoke today. We'll have to get that audio because, boy, it was earth-shattering and brought a lot of reaction. Rockets Summer League back at it tonight. I think it's at 7 o'clock against the Raptors. Astros on their way to Anaheim for a weekend series against the Angels. And something on your mind you want to get off your chest is always going to be on the table as well. It is the Press Box. It's ESPN.
Listening to ESPN 97.5. You're listening to The Press Box on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 92.5.
Powered by Infuse Energy. Affordable, hassle-free energy from a company that has your back. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Patrick Creighton.
Hey, here we go. Getting ready with the rest of the show. 713-780-3776. If you want to call or text, if you text, leave your name on it so that we can talk to you by name. Otherwise, you can hit us on Twitch. Hit us on Twitter. The Twitchers are already in first gear, getting ready to rev it up a little bit as we get into some things. Interesting that the Cubs have released Jake Arrieta after just completely imploding last night. He hit a couple guys, gave up a bunch of runs early. Brewers completely annihilated the Cubs. Now he's been released. I don't think he's the answer to your problems if you're the Astros. So I don't think that's something that they're going to look at. But you know what? Stranger things have happened.
If Jake Arrieta is willing to work on stuff in the minor leagues, which I doubt he is, but if he's willing to work on stuff in the minor leagues to try to, you know, get himself righted and figured out, then you don't mind giving him a, you know, one of those contracts where, you know, look, it's a minor league deal, but when we call you up, then you get major league pay. But if you go back to his, Cy Young year, and look at what he has been from there. He had a few more seasons where he was still pretty good, but it's just gone totally sideways.
Well, just this year alone, Pat, 5-11, 6.88 ERA, gave up 7 runs on 8 hits last night in the first inning when they lost 10-0. Since May 19th, his ERA was a 9.
Yeah, I mean, he won Cy Young in 2015. And he was 22-6. He had a 1.77 ERA. He was terrific. Since then, 3.10, 3.53, and 3.96.
Those are all fine.
Right. But the danger was his whip went from 0.86 to 1.08 to 1.21 to 1.28. The walks started increasing. Then it was 3.96. Then it was 4.64. Now, 4.64 in the National League, that's not a good ERA. And his whip was up to 1.47. Then it was 5.08 and 1.51. And when you see the increase in the whip, the walks and hits per innings pitched, and you look at, okay, the hit rate is going up, the walk rate is going up, the strikeout rate is going down. This year, he's walking 4 guys per 9.
I was going to say, kind of a combination between Brooks Raley and Fromber, but without Fromber's hard-biting breaking stuff when it's on. He's not the guy he once was, you're saying?
Not even close. And now 35 years old. This is probably the end of the line for Jake Arrieta.
It probably is. It's unfortunate. But again, I'm looking at it from the perspective of the Astros still have some things to kind of work out with their starting pitchers. Sure, there's enough pitchers to choose from where you just have to have the right guy step up so that you have 4 quality starters going into the playoffs at any given time. But at the same time, you know, that's the same reason why I was looking at the Olympic team and going, you know, we mentioned if they in and out, looks like they don't need any more bullpen help. Baez pitched the 9th yesterday. There's an issue with his velocity. However, he basically pitched a scoreless 9th and showed that, you know, he looks like between his changeup and his now somewhat fastball, that he's going to be able to get the job done. So a guy like David Robertson, who had pitched for the Yankees and had playoff experience, was a guy on the Olympic team, was not signed with anybody, could be a guy that teams are probably going to look at. Now probably Astros not one of those teams.
I would still be interested in David Robertson just because this year has shown you in about 37 minutes, it's likely somebody might get hurt. This has just been that year for the Astros. If you pitch in the Astros bullpen and your name's not Ryan Pressly, there's a good chance you're going to get hurt or you've been hurt or something because everybody has gone in and out in the bullpen this year.
Please don't jinx anybody else. I mean, you've done a really good job of trying to avoid that.
What I'm saying is, if you're looking at, okay, we want to make a postseason push, we want to be ready for the postseason, adding another postseason experienced, successful veteran reliever to your pen is not the worst idea. Hey, I would rather have David Robertson or Brooks Raley. That's not a hard decision for me.
That's not a hard decision at all for me.
So, you know, and considering that you're talking about, you're probably getting David Robertson on a, you know, what, $1 million prorated deal.
Prorated, right.
So, that again, this is a no-brainer deal for me. I'm going to go David Robertson. This is a guy who's been a closer. This is a guy who's been in the postseason. He's an established reliever. You know what you're going to get. And I'm much better with that than, All right, let's bring in Brandon Bielak, see what happens. Let's bring in Josh James and see what happens.
People think I get too hard on the Astros bullpen and critical of the players, but this is the kind of thing I'm talking about. I've seen enough of Bielak for 1 year. I've seen enough for Raley for several years. I can't have a guy, and I don't care what, you know, cybermetrics and analytics you want to get into, but when a guy's ERA had been hovering around 10 and 9 and it gradually got down into the high 8s, and people are trying to justify him to me and getting snarky on Twitter because I've seen enough of him being Dusty's security blanket, it's because that this isn't a middle-of-the-road team. This is a championship-caliber team, and I want to rest assured that the bullpen is going to live up to that billing and do what they need to do, and he wasn't getting it done. And those are the guys that it's not anything personal. That's exactly the reason why I feel the way I do. If you take a guy like David Robertson, I watched him pitch in the Olympics. The one thing, I get it, his fastball isn't what it used to be. It's still in the low 90s. But the bigger key is there's a lot of bite on his breaking pitches, and he has control of them. And that's and that's what you need. And he got some high-leverage situations in the Olympics where he pushed through and got the job done.
And he doesn't need to throw 98 to get guys out. You know, when you're a young pitcher and you throw 98, you think you need to throw 98 to get guys out. You want to reach back and bust it as hard as you can. As you get older and you know guys around the league and, you know, you've refined your breaking pitches and you know, you've established, okay, this is what I can command here and there. You know how to change planes, how to change size. This is why Zach Greinke, you know, who at this point may or may not be able to break a pane of glass with his fastball. This is why he's effective, because he'll put a pitch high and inside, followed by low and outside, you know, and then you know he can put one on the hands, you know, belt high, but it keeps riding in on it. He changes your eye level. Yes. He changes what side of the plate you're on. He'll have you hanging out over the plate and then come back and snap a breaking ball inside and have you totally off balance. You know, old saying goes, hitting is timing. Pitching is disrupting that timing. You don't have to throw as hard as possible. Greg Maddux wasn't throwing 98. I mean, when he was at his best, he threw 93.
But I tell everybody, Pat, it's the art of pitching, not just throwing. A lot of guys have that electric – again, that's, you know, the two terms that if you listen to the show at any length of time at all, you know, two terms that annoy the hell out of me because it's Josh James and it's Brian Abreu in a nutshell. He's got electric stuff. He's got a major league arm. He's also got a peanut for a brain a lot of times because he can't figure out how to direct that electric stuff in that major league arm to throw where the ball needs to be placed. Because I was going to say the same thing as you. Greinke's so smart at changing the eye level, changing the eye angles so that the hitter is not expecting where it's coming from. And that's the art of pitching. And that's why I like Blum on the games with Todd Callis, because Blummer will tell you, when you have pitchers on, or even Baggy. As a hitter, they pick up on that too. Well, if he's going to come at me low and inside with some hard stuff, he's probably going to follow that up with something that I might chase breaking off the outside corner. Things like that. That's where you become a pitcher and not just a guy that can overpower by throwing.
Now, speaking of Josh James, when I think about this, when Josh James, as part of his rehab, when he got to AAA and into Sugar Land, they changed his arm action. Right, they are changing Josh James' arm action to be shorter because they're trying to help him rein in his control. Yes, Josh James would throw 97, 98. He could rear back and hit 100. He had no idea where the hell the ball was going. And now they've shortened up his arm, and he's throwing 94, 95. Well, 95 and 94 with full command versus 99 and, you know, please God, let it be a strike. I'm going to take 94, 95 on the corner, pitcher's pitch versus 98, and it's going out 130.
Absolutely. Absolutely right. So, I mean, I think that's where you always kind of rely on Brett Strom. That's the value of having a Brett Strom as your pitching coach, is because he's taking guys, and Gerrit Cole's the perfect example of it, taking guys that have just gotten by on an overpowering fastball and being a power thrower, not a pitcher, and then developing them and giving them just a little extra, a little wrinkle here. Maybe it's not always developing another pitch or getting the spin rate, but just kind of processing from the time you get the ball till the time you release it, the way that you go about the position on the rubber, the way that you deliver the baseball so that you have the control that you need to kind of harness some of that power. That's the beauty of having a really world-class pitching coach. that's where some of these guys need to really listen more and try to just throw less.
Now you think about when Garrett Cole first came to Houston and his first day in spring training, and you're just playing catch because pitchers and catchers report early. So you're playing catch, and the catcher's asking him, hey, is this ball coming out of your hand the right way? How do you like the ball to come out of your hand? How do you like the spin to be on your ball? How much are you looking for? And he'd never been asked these questions before. And it kind of took him back. And then afterwards, you know, the catcher's like, oh, hey, by the way, they want to see you in the, you know, in the office because they've got all your film already broken down. They want to show you your best pitches, your worst pitches. This is what it looks like when you're throwing your best. This is what it looks like when you're struggling. Maybe you want to throw more four-seamers, less two-seamers. They're going to go over all this stuff with you. And you look at the difference in Garrett Cole in Pittsburgh and Garrett Cole in Houston. And just, like I said, just it was the tweaking and the refining, you know, and teaching him this is how you're at your best most consistently. And that's why he went from a guy with really good stuff to an elite pitcher. All right, we got to hit a break. Before we hit a break, let me tell you about carsforkids.org. You know, maybe you got that old clunker in your driveway or in your garage. And you got nothing you can do with it. It's not really worth a whole lot. It needs a bunch of work. Well, don't try to fix it or sell it on your own. That's a nightmare and it's expensive. Donate it to carsforkids.org. They accept all vehicle donations, cars, motorcycles, trucks, any condition, running or not, doesn't matter. And you get a full tax write-off for your donation. And if you mention ESPN Houston, you get a $50 Visa gift card to boot. Can't find the title? Doesn't matter. They do all the title work for you, and pickup is free. Your donation benefits Houston Can Academies, helping to give local Houston kids a second chance at a diploma. So go to carsforkids.org or call 713-225-4226. That's 713-225-4226. Donate your vehicle and write off the car, not the kid.
Years of research and innovation.
Innovation Map is the new voice of innovation in Houston.
Pretty cool, huh, Morty?
Covering startups, tech, energy, health, social impact, and more. Visit innovationmap.com today.
Do it now! Do it! Do it! Do it now!
This is the Press Box on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 92.5.
Powered by Infuse Energy, affordable, hassle-free energy from a company that has your back. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Patrick Creighton.
All right, second half hour of the program. It is the Press Box on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 FM. Always good to have Aaron Raybould in that center square. We're playing Hollywood Squares on the Twitch channel. As well as Pat Creighton and myself. A little bad news for the afternoon baseball crowd. The Oakland A's are beating the Cleveland Indians currently after four innings, 5-0. Not what I wanted to see. Not what I'm happy about.
Indians not doing the job, although the Twinkies did the job last night.
Everybody except the Indians did their job last night because the White Sox lost. The Red Sox hammered the Rays last night. So we got that taken care of. And then there was this little matter between the A's and the Indians where the Indians were winning the whole game until they weren't and gave up a four spot, and that was over, and they lost 6-3. Not happy.
No. The Red Sox did put up 20 on the Rays yesterday. It was 20-1 at one point. The game finished 20-8. But 20 runs against the Rays. I mean, that's one of the better pitching teams in baseball, and they gave up three touchdowns, which I can't say I'm upset about. The Halos got drilled by the Jays. The Rangers, well, they lost to the Mariners, and you probably prefer the Mariners to lose here, but they're the junk grabbers, and you don't care when they lose.
No, we don't care about the Rangers.
But the Twinkies, 1-0 shutout of the White Sox. So Twinkies right now, even though they're 15 under, giving the White Sox some trouble, just like they give the Astros some trouble.
Damn, it's about time. I'm tired of the Astros doing what they do and then having to hear you try and protect them and stick up for them every single day. You'd think it was me disciplining my kids and having my wife jump in the middle.
Usually it's the other way around. Usually my wife is the bad guy.
Oh, no, 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 no. I'm the bad guy.
No, my wife is the bad guy. I'm definitely the softy in the house.
Well, I mean, look, this morning, just again, sidebar, this morning I got up early. I got the kids up earlier because I knew that pickup line yesterday was a joke and I was going to get there a little earlier so I'd have to deal with it. I was on time. I was scheduled. My daughter's trying to eat. She's slow. She reaches for the iPad. She's going to turn that bad boy on and start watching some cartoons. I go, no, you're not. No, ma'am. I was like, nope, you need to focus on breakfast because we're out of here in 5 minutes. Coming up right behind me. Oh, no, no, babe. She's okay. She's going to be just fine. Just give her 5 to 10 to drink her milk and finish this and that and everything like that. Next thing you know, I'm 96 cars back in line, chomping at the bit, going, can't wait to get home. Can't wait for her to get back on the air tomorrow from vacation. You get your sweet Fanny back on Channel 2 and let me handle my girls in the morning. They're going to be there on time.
It is the slowest line, too. When you are in the back of the car rider line to drop the kids off.
It's annoying.
You never get there. It's like whenever it rains, if I'm driving the kids to school in the morning and it rains, we're leaving like 30 minutes early than what we would normally leave because I know if you try to get there at 8:30, you're going to be so far down the block, you might not even be on the block. You might be around the
corner. No, we're plotting it right now. We're plotting it as we speak because, by the way, my wife takes no blame for anything. It was definitely the fact that it's the second day of school and all these parents won't be doing this 2 weeks from now and she's heard it's going to ease up. But then we started plotting, but she goes, but babe, if you drop her off like a block away and you can just watch her walk in, couldn't you just park the car and walk and then she could walk in and then you don't have to go through that line? And I'm like, so now suddenly overprotective parent, you're okay with me watching my daughter walk the last block so that I don't have to come home 45 minutes later?
What grade is she in?
First.
Yeah, no.
Me of all people was not okay with that.
And you're at elementary school. That car rider line doesn't get shorter.
Oh, it did last year, and maybe it was pandemic driven. I don't know.
Probably,
but it was a breeze
driven,
last year.
But like my experience with car rider line in elementary school is that line's always freaking long.
It's
and when you get to junior high, the line is long on Monday and Friday, and if it rains.
Time out, junior high, they're riding their bikes. At that point, it's time to toughen up.
Well, if you live close enough to the school, they ride their bikes. Well,
and if you don't, then guess what? They get in better shape.
And high school, I don't know because
high school, this is not an issue.
I don't have to worry about it. They go to school with my wife. My wife drops them off in the morning. Bye. Done.
Because your wife's a teacher.
And she's literally dropping them off and then going to work herself, which is the high school and the elementary school she works at are a half a mile down the road. So she just goes down the block because we live like right behind the high school. She pulls out, drops them off at the high school, goes two blocks down, and she's at work.
Beautiful. Well, believe me, I'm already concocting plans, but it's not going to have my kid where I'm watching from a car a block away if someone decides to do something.
Not in first grade where all those cars are there. I wouldn't want my first grader, boy or girl, I wouldn't want my first grader walking, you know, even if it's just a block. People aren't paying attention, man. They're yelling at their kids. They're on their phones. They're talking, whatever. You know people aren't necessarily paying attention. They're not looking for little kids.
I mean, there's 18 crossing guards on every intersection. That I'm not worried about. But there's just a lot of really strange people in the world, too. So there's a lot of reasons why I'm against that. One of the things I was against when it came to the Astros, thank God I don't have to worry about that one. We talked about possible pitching additions that could be out there, whether the Astros are involved in that or not. But one of the names that disgusted me that everybody was throwing out there a week or so ago is a guy the Astros should go back and get. Josh Reddick. Thank God it looks like the Mets are going to sign him to a minor league contract, so I don't even have to fathom having Josh Reddick in his Spider-Man britches back in the clubhouse for your Houston Astros.
And isn't that everything you need to know? Minor league contract.
That's where he started with the Diamondbacks this year.
I have a lot of love for Josh Reddick because he was part of the 2017 championship team. He had some nice moments here for the Astros. He's a personable guy. He was a fan favorite. Josh Reddick's not very good anymore.
Well, he got up to the major leagues, got 158 plate appearances with the Diamondbacks and hit 258. His numbers were 258, 285, 371 line. Over those 158 plate appearances. And when the last place D-backs let you go, there's not many other places for you to land. Now, so now you're in the minor leagues with the Mets.
Understand what Joel just gave you for those numbers. Understand what they were. He hit 258. Oh, well, 258's not that bad.
158 appearances.
He had two homers, right? So he wasn't really hitting for power. He had a 285 on base because he only walked six times in 54 games. His OPS is 656, which means not hitting for power and not getting on base. In fact, an OPS of 800, you're a quality regular. 800 is like all-star. You're like an all-star level player. 750, you're a generic ball player. 700, you're replacement level. You're a bench guy. If you're under a 700 OPS, you're a guy getting sent down to AAA. And he was 656. That's brutal. In fact, considering the number of games that he played, that would be the worst OPS for any season for him where he played a minimum 54 games.
There you go. So that would be one that I don't have to worry about. Nice little piece as well that I wanted to get to because of the fact that it does show your Astros players some love. They had an article on baseball's most underrated players of 2021, and Luis Garcia got honorable mention. Yuli Gurriel got honorable mention. You start going through the list, and you're like, well, here we go again. It's going to be other guys because that's what the national media has done all year. Cronenworth of the Padres was on the list. A couple of Brewers were on the list.
Cronenworth's been on my list. He was in my fantasy baseball, daily fantasy baseball lineups all the time last year because he was dirt cheap and he produces over expectation. Cronenworth is a very good, underrated player.
Yeah. So Jonathan Loaisiga from the Yankees, of course, because you got to have a Yankee, was on the list. Him. Willie Adames, since he left the Rays and went to the Brewers and found his bat again, has been a guy that has been on a lot of people's list. But then, lo and behold, after they give you the entire list, including, by the way, Cedric Mullins, who's a stud. He is the best player on the Baltimore Orioles by far. But he's an all-star. He plays a really good center field, but he is a stick. And so he was on the list. But what I really was pleased with was they finished all of the people that they listed and the honorable mentions. And then they, by the way, said in a category all by himself, the most underrated player in baseball is Uncle Mike, Michael Brantley.
Michael Brantley, you know what? You think about, you know, his contract that, you know, the Astros gave him the second year so that he'd come here instead of going to Toronto with George. And you look at what he's hitting, and he's hitting .329.
He's going to win the batting title, right? No, after yesterday, he's hitting .333, isn't he?
So after yesterday, he had another, you know, what, he had three hits yesterday? Yeah. So Uncle Mike is hitting career high average and continues to hit, you know, for power. People think, oh, well, he's only got seven homers. Look at the doubles total. Look at the OPS total. You can hit for power without just banging homers. And that's what we're doing. You see a guy whose OPS is north of 800. That guy's banging a lot of extra base hits. And this is what he's doing. And for a guy who had only hit, I mean, look, he's the 22 homers, I think, you know, when his first year in Houston, that's his career high.
Yeah. But I mean, you are big on the numbers, but a 131 OPS plus, 9.6 war. I mean, and you just go up and down the list. You're going to sacrifice a few of the long balls, as you mentioned, but his extra base hits, his contact, the way that he's now taking advantage of teams that dare shift on him and just kind of pulling the trigger just a hair later and just slapping that ball to the left field side.
We saw one of those yesterday.
Yeah, picking up more hits that way.
He took an inside breaking ball, inside out swing, beat the shift, got another hit. 332 right now, leads the league in hitting right now. And his OPS is 865. He's only got seven homers. He's got 28 doubles.
And they said there might not be a better pure hitter in the game today. And you were worried about, did you overpay? Not you personally, but Astros fans. Did we overpay to get Brantley for two more years? No, you did not.
To put in perspective, right? 2019, Michael Brantley, first year in Houston, career high, 22 home runs. He had an 875 OPS. He's at 865 right now because that's how many doubles he hits. He is, and he's never going to be an elite fielder. And especially at this stage, his career is 34 years old. And, you know, he has some foot and ankle issues. But he still plays a serviceable left field. And he absolutely rakes at the dish.
No doubt. So there's some good news if you're an Astros fan like we are. We've got plenty more to get to. Like I said, Rockets are getting ready for Summer League. But Deshaun Watson had something to say today, believe it or not. Media went wild. Social media crazy. Did he say anything at all? We'll give it to you next, right here on the Press Box ESPN. Even in the darkest hour, even when I know it can't be true, I keep seeing visions of you, visions of visions
of you. ESPN 97.5. Listening to the Press Box on ESPN 97.5
and on ESPN 92.5.
Powered by Infuse Energy, affordable, hassle-free energy from a company that has your back. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Patrick Creighton.
Hey, rolling through our number one three-hour program, Press Box, ESPN 97.5, 92.5 FM. It is Aaron, Pat, and myself, Joel, as we get you ready for some football. There is football tonight, by the way, between the Washington football team and the New England Patriots. But the one team that everybody's most focused on a daily basis is the three-ring circus on Kirby, known as the Houston Texans. Well, in case you were wanting the daily update, yes, he was there. Yes, he was wearing his red jersey with the white number 4. Yes, he did the normal morning walk of shame, where they go from the locker room in the stadium to the bubble, and the press is all there, and they're all shooting cameras to try and get that one little facial shot, or hopefully he'll say something. And lo and behold, today, Deshaun said something. We'll decipher it if you can't make it out with the wind blowing, but he basically asked a question and then made a statement.
How y'all always feeling me every day? It's the same.
Why y'all always filming me every day? It's the same
bleep
every day. Well, guess what? Why are you still showing up every day? If you don't want to be here, then what are you doing? Because you're going through more than the motions. There was other, because first of all, by the way, social media lost its bleep and local mind the minute that this quote came out. Every single radio, TV, blog, you name it, this was being thrown at you 100 miles an hour. And if they didn't have the audio or the video, they were translating it and they were transcribing it and putting that as Deshaun just said. Well, guess what? You know why they're out there? Because you are. It's not because this team is Super Bowl caliber. It's not because this team is playoff ready and you want to see just how good they're going to be. And there's all these stories to cover, because the only story anybody seems to be worried about right now is Deshaun there? Is he practicing? Was Deshaun saying anything today? Did he partake in quarterback work? And then, lo and behold, the last question which people ask is now going to be addressed as well. Did he get hurt? Because after practice got going, and because the media didn't have to leave, nice try, Nick Caserio, with your little this is regular season mode crap yesterday, the league shut down. He spent some time with the trainers. Don't get into the training table talk, the massage table. We're not getting to all that. I believe they were addressing a lower leg issue. I don't want to say injury, but these are the things we've talked about that can happen.
This whole circus is, you know, the blame is equally culpable here between the Texans and Deshaun Watson, right? Watson, you continue to show up. The Texans say, all right, well, we're gonna run you out there, because you two parties can't come up with some sign of a solution where Deshaun stays home and avoids the giant circus that the two parties are creating. Of course, you're getting filmed, just like all the other 89 guys out there are getting filmed. Deshaun has been with the Texans since 2017. Number of times before today that he was unhappy with a camera filming him, zero. Number of times before today that he ever complained about, you know, being on camera or media, even being around, zero. it's clear Deshaun doesn't want to be here, so he's in a sour mood. Oh, why are you filming me? Well, because you're here. And it's kind of stupid that you're here. And that's your fault as much as it is the Texans' fault. Maybe if the Texans weren't such dumbasses in the way they handled the organization, and Deshaun wasn't such a dumbass in the way he handled his own personal life, we wouldn't be in this situation. Yet you did, and we are. Why is everyone so excited? Deshaun said. Because this is the first time anybody's gotten Deshaun to say anything since last year.
Well, that's the thing, too. I mean, so here's... I said this over and over again, but the circus leader of the three-ring circus, first of all, players love attention. So he loves this. But there were rumblings of exactly what I said to you the other day and numerous times before that, and it came up in the media last night. It's starting, and I believe it was on ESPN, I don't even think it was local, that they said patience is starting to wear thin in the locker room. Guys are starting to get rubbed the wrong way by the first question out of every reporter's mouth to a player currently on this roster that's going to have to go through trying to win games for this football team this year. What about Deshaun? They're sick and tired of it. And they're starting to look, instead of looking at the league and saying you had to do something, like we mentioned what Major League Baseball did with Bauer, until all the legal stuff is settled, then you're on leave. Well, instead of waiting again another day for the NFL to get involved, the players are starting to get irritated with management. They're starting to look at Nick Caserio. Instead of worrying about the fact that you were trying to pull a little fast one and kind of manipulate the rules and say you're on regular season schedule so that the media couldn't film practice and be there all the time to see Deshaun, and where's Deshaun, and is he on the training table, is he on the field, is he going through drills, and all these other things. You wanted to try and circumvent the system instead of doing the absolute right thing, which is if he's not in your plans and you know he doesn't want to be there, suck it up, Buttercup. You're going to have to pay him anyway, but just keep him away.
Here's the bottom line. If the NFL puts him on the commissioner's exempt list, you got to pay him anyway. So what's the difference between whether you say, look, Deshaun, we're going to pay you, go the hell home, or the NFL says you're on the exempt list, they're going to pay you, go the hell home? Why don't the Texans just have the damn stones to do what the NFL is ultimately going to do anyway? They look, it's the traveling circus. And it's par for the course with the damn Texans. They can't get out of their own way. Whether it's trying to lie to the media, how they handle Deshaun, it doesn't matter. The way they construct the roster, the way they make trades, everything this team does is ass backwards from how it should get done. Very simple. You don't want them asking questions? Send them the hell home.
That's what I'm saying. He's a distraction. Why? You have enough distractions with Jack Easterby, with a new first-year head coach that has never been offered a head coaching position 16, 17 years deep into the NFL, and he's getting his first crack at it. You got a first-time general manager that everybody knows from the Belichick tree is a guy that's going to do exactly the kind of stuff that he tried to pull yesterday. But if he's smarter, as smart as Belichick when it comes to player personnel decisions and handling his locker room, then this Deshaun would not be out there in New England. Because this kind of distraction is not what Bill Belichick would tolerate. Because Bill Belichick is all about the guys that are on the field, that will be playing for me, that want to be here, and are going to buy into the things that we're trying to do and our process. If you are not going to be one of those guys, you are not going to be on the field. And whether we pay you or not, you're absolutely spot on, Pat. The fact that the NFL is going to tell you one way or another, you're still paying him. You knew exactly. No one... It doesn't take a rocket scientist to realize he was coming in just so he didn't get the $50,000 a day fine. Okay, he did what he had to do. Now you do what you have to do to make sure that this team has the best chance to at least have a level playing field for the 17 games.
Yeah, and I said there's no petty like sports petty. Why is Deshaun here? Is this the Texans being petty on Deshaun? Well, you know what? Since you showed up, well, we're going to have you stand out there and do nothing because, well, screw you. The whole thing is just patently ridiculous. And for their solution to, well, how do we get the media to stop focusing on Deshaun? How do we get them to stop asking about Deshaun? How do we get them to stop filming everything Deshaun? We'll just lock out the media. The NFL has a very specific rule on how long training camp has to go and how long it must be open to the media. And that date is August 26th. That is a hard and fast black and white date that the Texans thought, eh, F the rules. I can't imagine if Bob McNair were still here, that would have flown. I can't imagine that would have flown. I would really like to know who came up with the idea. Let's just say we're in regular season mode and F these guys. Because Cal has no idea what the hell is going on.
That is such a New England move. It's one of two guys. It's either Jack or it's Caserio. And maybe they did it together. But one way or another, that's a Patriot move.
I mean, they look as dumb can be. This is a basic rule. And we didn't know it was a bit. How do you not know? Are you that stupid? Because you're running a football team while then proclaiming, well, we didn't know because we're stupid. Well, he's also, the same guy who said he's not a draft expert. So, I don't know. If you're a Texans fan, I don't know how you have any faith in anything this team does. Because if there's a way to screw it up, they're going to find it. And if it hasn't been invented yet, they will invent it. They just did.
Well, there you have that. First hour of the show is in the rearview mirror, but plenty to go in the windshields. We got 2 hours on the schedule and lots of things to talk about. Rocket Summer League game tonight. Some moves, news and notes from around the NFL and some other things, of course. And it always includes you, 713-780-3776. Calls and texts, Twitch and Twitter, hour two, right around the corner. Press box, ESPN.
ESPN 97.5.
I assume you knew.